Morning Pensacola, Andrew McKay and the Pensacola Morning News starts right now.
And all you'd ever hear me say is how I picture me with you. That's all you'd ever hear me say. But since you've been gone, I can't breathe for the first time. I'm so moving on,
So today is our first full day on scene. Our investigative team will be on scene as long as it takes in order to obtain all of the perishable evidence and all of the fact-finding that is needed to bring us to a conclusion of probable cause. Our mission is to understand not just what happened, but why it happened, and to recommend changes to prevent it from happening again.
As J. Todd Inman, he's one of the board members for the National Transportation Safety Board, or NTSB, as you usually hear it referred to, in the very brief and essentially uninformative briefing that they did yesterday, which, I mean, it was right of them to do it. It was right of them to say they weren't going to be able to say anything, and then they didn't say anything. And that's the right answer, okay? They were basically getting together to assure people that they were on the scene, they were working. I mean, their office is like a mile away from the crash scene. And just there to kind of tell people that they're putting the group together and in the very preliminary stages of organizing the investigation.
Our intention is to have a preliminary report within 30 days, and the final report will be issued once we've completed all of our fact-finding and investigation.
It's good to expectation set, 30 days for the preliminary final report, eventually. And it's very unsatisfying for a news apparatus that's going to want to have as much content now, because in a week nobody will remember. I mean, maybe for this, because it's a significant number of deaths, maybe we'll remember in a month. But, you know, you get what I'm saying. It's, you know, feed the beast now. Otherwise, why are you wasting our time is kind of the basic issue for the press.
Now, we will not be determining the probable cause of the accident while we're here on scene, nor will we speculate about what may have caused this accident.
Good. I mean, you know, how many times have you heard our local law enforcement say, well, we can't comment, it's an ongoing investigation, we'll let you know when we know. I mean, you know, that's the right answer. That's not the answer the president gave, but it is the right answer. And, you know, somebody had asked the first question, well, do we know whether it's people or machines or what made this problem? And there's a lot of times when I'm watching press events like this, and I wish I could be there and just, like, sit next to the person who's asking the dumb question and just flick him in the ear. Bro, stop. He just said he's not going to answer that question. Why are you asking?
The question was, is there been human error or mechanical failure? We don't know what we know just yet. We do not know enough facts to be able to rule in or out human factor, mechanical factors. That is part of the NTSB investigative process and where all of these groups will come together. It's one of the reasons why the NTSB is known as the gold standard. We will take the time that's necessary, but I'd also like to reiterate, if we find something that is a significant issue that warrants immediate action, we will not hesitate to make those recommendations and make them public. We have a good track record on that, and we want to continue doing so.
That's a great answer. We're the gold standard because we take our time, we do it thoroughly. If we find something along the way that needs immediate action, we'll make that known, but it's going to be a while before you get good answers. So naturally, what are they asking next?
Heard from President Trump today, talking about DEI hiring policies within the FAA and associating that with the cause of this accident. What do you say to that?
Well, unfortunately, I didn't hear the remarks. I was briefing House and Senate members, but I believe Chair, which
we were over here doing our job, by the way.
As part of any.
And by the way, I love that he passes it off to the board chair. When probably this is her job. They probably briefed this in advance. Like, all right, I'm going to take the hard questions about Trump.
As part of any investigation, we look at the human, the machine, and the environment. So we will look at all the humans that were involved in this accident. Again, we will look at the aircraft, we will look at the helicopter, we will look at the environment in which they were operating in. That is standard in any part of our investigation.
Great answer. Can we ask a different way to get some drama?
Does it hurt your investigative process to have the president already suggesting possible causes here as you try to keep an open mind and begin this investigation?
Can you please give us a sound clip where you criticize the president? Please.
Tom, with all due respect, I think the press also likes to state what probable cause is before we get to the probable cause.
And we did yesterday, of course. That's what we do. But, you know, and listen, if you heard my opening monologue at 6 o'clock, you know I have a lot of very critical words for the president's comments yesterday. But, you know, again, it's just like, how can we fish for the controversy? You know, how can we find the juicy sound clip? Well, you know, the NTSB isn't there to give you a juicy sound clip. The NTSB is there to tell you that this is meticulous, boring work, and at the end, we're going to have a report. It's going to be thorough, and why don't you give us till then? See ya? You know, right? I mean, that's the right answer. So again, I just thought, I so often I watch these things, and I think, I remember when we had the attack on NES Pensacola, and there was all the local journalists, you know, me and the WAR people in PNJ, and we're all with Grover in the press conference, and there was some dude from CNN there, and he's like, wanting to be all tough guy, aggressive, and ask some question. We're all looking like, bro, just go back to New York. You're so dumb. Stop it. Let us do our business, because you're not going to care in a day. 616 on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. What did Meta, President Mark Zuckerberg, do to get them canceled this week? And why are we praising their employees in the Transgressive Memorial Service coming up next? John Pickens has traffic on the fives.
No accidents to let you know about right now. I-10, I-110 flowing smoothly. Starting to see a minor delay if you're going Highway 29 northbound just north of 9 Mile Road. But other than that, traffic looks good. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the fives.
It's the Always Sunny Show. When you're ready to throw a barbecue, it's Always Sunny's. Join us today at 9:30 with me, Eldon Scott, to hear about barbecue events in the Pensacola community, win some amazing prizes, and hear from community leaders and how Sunny's Barbecue has built a strong Pensacola for 40 years. Pep Talk with Eldon Scott, spreading the spirit of barbecue far and wide. Remember to tell Sunny that Eldon sent you.
The Pensacola Expert Panel on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.
Start your year in a new Subaru from Anderson Subaru. 2024 Crosstrek model starting at $25,262. 2024 Forester Wilderness model starting at $36,222. And 2025 Outback model start at $28,868. Love is out there. Find it at Anderson Subaru. Highway 29 just north of Car City, Pensacola. For details, call 877-554-9791.
Anderson's got a Subaru for you.
Each Sunday at 7:30 a.m., the Bible Baptist Bookstore of Pensacola, Florida, brings you Theological Seminar with teacher Peter S. Ruckman, founder and president of the Pensacola Bible Institute. He will teach you what the Bible says about the subject, not merely what it is presumed to teach.
Tune in this Sunday at 7:30 a.m. for Theological Seminar with Dr. Peter S. Ruckman, brought to you by Bible Baptist Bookstore on News Radio 92.3 AM 1620.
The Dave Ramsey Show, weeknight 7 to 10, before WEAR TV News, on News Radio 92.3. Informative, local, dependable.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today for the Transgressors Memorial Service, remembering those who have transgressed against the great spirit of inclusion and must forever be cast into the abyss of dead names. Let's join Brother Andrew remembering those who we have lost.
Before we begin our service, it has come to my attention that we have several visitors in the other ship this morning, most of whom came for the grief counseling services we started offering at last week's service. So many of us are still in deep pain over the inauguration of President You-Know-Who, that some of the ladies started assembling denial kits to help soothe the raw hurt we're all experiencing. Today's kits include Men Are a Vestigial Organ t-shirts, AOC Hearts Me wristbands, and surplus copies of Hillary Rodham Clinton's delightful treatise, It Takes a Village. In fact, we have so many of them that you can choose hardcover, paperback, or one of each to take with you. Put one under your pillow and pray for a visit from the feminism fairy, their self, for maximum effect. In addition, because I think we all need it, I have decided to deliver an all-uplifting and praise service this week. First, we want to celebrate the effort by big-box retail giant Costco to stand firm in their commitment to diversity, equity, and inclusion principles, despite the rapidly dwindling cultural support for them. Costco shareholders voted last week to reject an anti-DEI proposal, which would have had the company issue a report on the costs and hazards of DEI policies. In response, Costco affirmed that its, quote, commitment to an enterprise rooted in respect and inclusion is appropriate and necessary. The report requested by this proposal would not provide meaningful additional information, end quote. Bravo, big box, and that's not something we get to say very often. However, Costco's brave and defiant stance comes in the wake of a wave of heretical betrayals of our cause by so many corporations, including McDonald's, Ford, Lowe's, Coors, Walmart, and even Amazon, an entity we once certified as 100% woke pliant. Lucky for Costco, the Reverend Al Sharpton forged a boycott of the store, encouraging his dozen of loyal followers to affirmatively shop there as a reward for their stance. What we especially appreciate about Costco's behavior is their total refusal to look at the actual facts and study the costs of DEI. Of course it costs money to be virtuous. Of course it hurts your bottom line to do the right thing. That's how you know it's good, because it hurts so much. If being good made you more money, everyone would do it. And instead of figuring out how much productivity is actually lost by DEI, Costco said, "We don't care how much money we lose. Virtue signaling is its own reward." Moreover, Costco is now being sued by the attorneys general from 19 states over their commitment, costing them even more money just to do the right thing. So well done, giant discount retail chain that puts local and small businesses out of existence. Well done. Woe unto all who offend.
Woe unto all who offend.
Second, the employees at the rapidly devolving nation state of Facebook and Instagram parent company Meta, where Mark Zuckerberg was recently reversed course on all sorts of policies in what can only be described as a whimpering surrender before the throne of President We'll Never Say It Out Loud. But perhaps the greatest outrage of all was when Meta decided to no longer supply women's sanitary products in their men's bathrooms. That's right, Meta has actually stopped putting tampons in the men's rooms in a hateful, discriminatory, and transphobic attack on non-binary and transgender employees. But sometimes an atrocity opens the way for something beautiful to happen. In this case, Meta employees began circulating a petition to restore these much-needed female products in the male spaces. Gaia knows we love a good petition. Then they actually started bringing their own pads, tampons, and liners into the men's bathrooms, even leaving extras for other employees who weren't brave enough to do so for themselves. Now, it does remain unclear just how many trans and non-binary employees actually needed to access personal hygiene products in the men's bathrooms at Meta, but that's not really the point. Providing tampons in the men's room is a symbol, a proud, glossy, wrappered symbol declaring that there are no purely male or purely female spaces because gender is a construct, not a real thing. And as a symbol of the gender resistance, we can think of nothing finer than this subversive use of textiles. And that is why we are now formally announcing the courageous, gender barrier-breaking employees at Facebook and Instagram are the inaugural recipients of the first annual Red Badge of Courage Ultra Thin with Wings. And may many more deserve the honor in future skirmishes of the Great Gender War of 2025. Woe unto all who offend.
Woe unto all who offend.
Finally, we find ourselves completely awestruck by the elegant linguistic maneuver performed recently by Chase Strangio, a transgender lawyer for the American Civil Liberties Union. In talking about new rules promulgated by the Department of Housing and Urban Development under President You-Know-Who, Strangio criticized the effort to prohibit transgender women from single-sex rape shelters and other intimate female spaces. This was, of course, appropriate. But it was the way he did it, not the fact that he did it, which earns our praise this week.
Including this directive to HUD to issue proposed regulations to, in essence, exclude trans people from various forms of shelter system under the auspices that a trans person is an inherent threat to non-transgender women.
To refer to so-called biological women as non-transgender women is simply brilliant. And to do it so casually, almost flippantly, in passing, as though it's just the way we say things, was a masterstroke. You see, for years, we've been struggling to find an effective way to make this paradigm shift in language. At first, we would simply talk about women and transgender women, but this obviously left the impression that born women were the norm or default and needing no modifier, whereas trans women were the different, the distortion, or the deviation from that norm and therefore needed an extra adjective as trans. Our movement's next effort in this direction was to start using the prefix cis as often as possible to make the distinction, women who identify as their birth gender. Thus, women were either trans women or cis women, but we admit now this was too clunky to take root. As a result, we've been tinkering with some other ways to denormalize bio women, such as calling them traditional women as opposed to modern women. But our enemies in the culture were actually liked that term, no good. We proposed women by birth and women by choice. But this only doubly traumatized our trans sisterin by making their identity seem like a choice rather than a revelation of their real nature. No good. But then along came Mr. Strangio with his wonderful word invention, trans women and non-trans women. This actually places trans as the default setting, from which non-trans gets its meaning, completely shifting the paradigm so that being transgender is seen as the norm or ideal and cisgender as the deviation. But it's more than linguistic genius. It represents a value inversion as well. Now with this term, we have finally put in the language the idea that it's better to be trans than to be cis. After all, someone like Mr. Strangio, identified a girl at birth, has overcome his birth body to become who he really is. There are, in fact, only two kinds of people. Those who are still imprisoned by their birth sex, and those who have successfully transcended their birth bodies to become their real selves. You might say the entire world is really made up of trans persons and not yet trans persons. So high marks for merit, and we recommend you chase Strangio for the holy order of relanguaging without wings. Woe unto all who offend.
Woe unto all who offend.
Before you leave, we do have an announcement on terminology. Recently, there's been some question about whether the word mansplain is appropriate for us to use or not. Naturally, once the question was raised, the semi-permanent Trilateral Commission on Authorizing and Deauthorizing Vocabulary convened to address the question. Their ruling was very clear. I'm reading now from the meeting minutes as published in the Quarterly Review of Acceptable Words and Phrases, January 2025, and I quote, "The act of mansplaining, or presuming ignorance of a subject and then explaining it without having been asked to do so when speaking to a person identified female at birth, is of course sexist and therefore prohibited under the rule against mansplaining. However, the term itself shall be retained precisely because it reflects negatively upon people assigned male at birth. And as the sixth commandment of eighth wave feminism teaches, anything which reflects poorly upon men is encouraged, whereas anything which reflects poorly upon women is prohibited." End quote. Unfortunately, our fellowship has been issued a second-degree warning for wasting the commission's time by failing to properly apply one of the feminist Ten Commandments. And we're not allowed to ask another question for 6 months, and we have been docked 2 rivets on our Rosie the Riveter True Believer score. Sorry to end this service on such a sour note, my friends.
And now, brethren, sisterin, and otherin, having been cleansed of these hurtful words, give each other the holy virtue signal and go forth and transgress no more.
627, News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. I'm Andrew McKay. John Pickens has traffic on the fives.
Rosie the Riveter?
The Rosie the Riveter virtue, yeah.
Right. I'm still dying over ultra thin also. Okay. All right. No accidents to let you know about right now. Looks like I-10, I-110 are flowing smoothly. Still seeing just some minor delays if you're headed northbound on Highway 29 right there at the 9 Mile intersection. But other than that, traffic looks good. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the five.
So would you say that was a traffic report without wings? Okay. Just checking to be sure. David Wayne is in the newsroom with our headlines. David?
Well, some preliminary information out from the FAA on their report of the crash in Washington, D.C. They're saying that the airport's air traffic control tower staffing was not normal during the time of that crash on Wednesday. Multiple reports say the tower typically has a controller that's focused just on helicopter traffic and another checking airplane activity. 67 people died, of course, in that collision. Secretary of Health and Human Services nominee Robert F. Kennedy Jr. was called on yesterday to explain his past claims that black people have better immune systems than white people. On day two of his confirmation hearings, Kennedy was questioned by Senator Angela Alsobrooks about that. Once she was finished hearing Kennedy Jr.'s response, she said she would not vote for him.
You know, it's very interesting. It might be true.
Yeah.
I mean, black people have darker skin than white people, by definition, right? That black people have different hair texture than white people, right? Okay. It might be true that black people have different immune systems than white people. I don't know whether it's true or not, but like this culture that says you can't even ask the question or talk about it, that's the problem. Now, he might be full of it. He might be crazy. But the fact that you might have the question, I mean, we should talk about the question. We know that black and white people have different health outcomes. Is that just because of the system, or is that, go ahead, David. I think I prevented your third story. I apologize.
No, that's a good point. We have to be able to ask those questions.
Open inquiry has to look in all directions, right?
Absolutely. The NFL is announcing its lowest number of concussions for a full season since they started tracking those back in 2015. The league says last year they had 182 concussions. That's during both practices and games. And that means concussions were down 17% from the previous year.
All right, David, thanks so much for the update. Yeah, that's why I do Transgressors. It's part to, you know, explain the mindset, to skewer the mindset, but also to remind you, you got to look everywhere for your possibilities. Stop precluding things.
Fox News, I'm Gianna Gelosi. Divers back in the Potomac River looking for clues as to what led to the aircraft crash over Washington, D.C. Wednesday night.
The Associated Press getting a hold of an internal report from the FAA that night, which seemed to suggest there may have been staffing issues. The report saying the position configuration was not normal for this time of day and volume of traffic.
That's Fox's Mark Meredith. 67 people died. Some of President Donald Trump's more controversial cabinet nominees appeared for confirmation hearings yesterday, like Tulsi Gabbard, who's up for director of national intelligence.
Gabbard had pushed a pardon for Edward Snowden. He ripped off intelligence records and fled to Russia. There's bipartisan concern that Gabbard would not guard secrets. That's why senators tangled with Gabbard about Snowden.
That's Fox's Chad Pergram. America's listening to Fox News.
Good morning, 6:31 at News Radio 92.3. And right now we've got cloudy skies. It is 68 degrees in Pensacola. Pensacola nonprofit Survivor-Led Solutions held their annual Because I Wore This banquet last night. Now, the goal of that event was to change the idea that women cause sexual assaults because of their actions or because of what they were wearing at the time and put that blame back on perpetrators. Money raised supported victims of sexual exploitation and human trafficking. It also helps to support jail outreach programs for female inmates in both Escambia and Santa Rosa counties.
We go in once a week and five times in Escambia County to create trust and rapport and give them some tools for reentry. And then we partner with local organizations to make those referrals and outpatient services.
That's Alicia Tappan from Survivor-Led Solutions, the CEO and founder. Several women told their stories last night and discussed how they've used their trauma to change their lives for the better. For more information on the organization, just check their website at survivorledsolutions.org. Well, we are following that deadly mid-air collision in Washington, D.C. Wednesday night. 67 people died. Officials say there were no survivors. Pensacola Airport Director Matt Coughlin used to be a military helicopter pilot. He says there are a lot of questions surrounding the crash.
This is an out-of-the-normal type operations up there, so something was amiss. Questions I would have, and these are probably helicopter perspective questions, is for the air crew, were they wearing night vision goggles? Were they goggled up? Because that potentially impacts their visual sight in peripheral, in both in color and depth perception.
Coughlin did say he's expecting to see multiple contributing factors listed when that official report is finally released. Also seeing today, there is a Florida connection to that plane crash. The pilot of the American Airlines plane that was involved lived and worked in Volusia County. Epic Flight Academy in New Smyrna Beach said yesterday that Jonathan Campos had earned his certified flight instructor rating at their school. He was also a flight instructor there. The school wrote on Facebook he was a skilled and a dedicated pilot with a passion for flying. Governor DeSantis blasting state Republican lawmakers for passing the Trump Act illegal immigration bill this week. The governor said it's weak and believes it's ridiculous that state police and sheriffs would have to get permission from the agriculture commissioner before they turned in illegal immigrants to ICE.
You got to do a mother may I. You're not allowed. And look, maybe this is unconstitutional. It's ridiculous. If there was a ridiculous clause in the Constitution, it would definitely be unconstitutional.
Governor DeSantis vowed to veto that legislation once it hits his desk. And the original founder of Seville Quarter has died, Bob Snow. He passed away last week in Orlando. Local businessman Buck Mitchell says he was a driving force back in the 70s in creating the downtown that we know and love.
He truly is the one who brought downtown Pensacola back to life. He also did the same thing in Orlando. He went to derelict part of town, downtown Orlando, and their, you know, billion-dollar buildings right next door to him at Church Street Station that he opened in around 72 in Orlando.
Bob created Rosie O'Grady's, now the Seville Quarter. He came to Pensacola as a naval aviator, owned several businesses here. He was also known for skywriting in his biplane. He was picked as the Businessman of the Year back in 1975 by the Pensacola News Journal editorial board. Seville is holding a memorial for him this Sunday afternoon at 2 p.m. 6:35 at News Radio, and let's get a look at our traffic on the fives with John Pickens.
Brought to you by Generator Source, powering Pensacola businesses with industrial generators to commercial backup systems with the most trusted brands. Expert installation, 24/7 support. That's GeneratorSource.com. No accidents on the big board right now. Still looking at I-10, I-110 are looking good. Starting to see a little slowdown if you're on Highway 90 around 87 at that intersection. But other than that, traffic is looking great. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the 5.
Showers and thunderstorms will move through as we go into the morning and afternoon hours. High today near 72 degrees. Overnight tonight, temperatures dropping near 48. On Saturday, sunny skies with a high near 68 degrees. Going into Saturday night, temperatures from the First Morning Weather Center.
Thank you very much, Brooke. And right now, we've got 68 degrees in Pensacola, 65 in Gulf Breeze. We've got 68 reported in Milton. Our next news is at 7. We've got breaking news anytime it happens. And I'm David Wayne for News Radio 92.3. Informative, local, dependable. Now taking a look at our market report, pre-opening market report here from Your Money Now.
I'm Nicole Murray with Your Money Now. Treasury yields inched higher this morning as investors awaited the latest inflation reading as well as other economic data. The 10-year Treasury yield was more than 2 basis points higher at 4.5387%. Pollo Campero has announced plans to add 4 new restaurants across Louisiana. Pollo Campero's menu features classic fried chicken specials with sides like fries and coleslaw while boasting a unique blend of spices. President Trump has confirmed he will impose 25% tariffs on imports from Mexico and Canada. The duties go into effect tomorrow. Trump told reporters his administration has yet to determine whether oil imports will be included in the policy. Investors will focus today on December data for the Personal Consumption Expenditures Price Index. Data drops at 8:30 a.m. Eastern Time. Futures are moderately higher. Thursday, the Dow Industrials gained 168, the NASDAQ up 49. That's Your Money Now.
It's always Sonny's here. This is Eldon with Sonny's Barbecue. When you're ready for slow smoke barbecue prepared by local pitmasters since 1968, it's always Sonny's. Visit us at 4 convenient locations in the News Radio area: Pine Forest, Navy Boulevard, 9th Avenue, and in Pace on Highway 90. With $10 big deals and all-you-can-eat ribs for only $19.99 every day. Kids eat free every Saturday, and don't forget that good old banana pudding. All served with a heaping portion of Southern hospitality. Open daily at 10:45. And remember, it's always Sonny's here.
Ladies, do you want to feel more connected to our community? Consider joining Impact 100 Pensacola Bay Area, a woman's philanthropic group that has awarded 165 grants totaling more than $17 million in our community. Connect with other women and increase your area impact. Membership deadline is March 1st. For details, check us out on Facebook or visit Impact100Pensacola.org.
The cost of healthcare is all in the news. Hi, I'm Meg, inviting you to tune in Monday at 9 on the Pensacola Expert Panel as ProHealth will be the guest. They will be discussing the ProHealth Medical Membership Program as well as an offer of 20 affordable on-site ultrasounds. Find out how ProHealth can help you take out the stress and cost of healthcare on the Pensacola Expert Panel.
The Pensacola Expert Panel on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.
Do you want to stay up to date on the latest news, weather, and traffic, but don't have a radio nearby? Then you need to download our new app. With the News Radio Pensacola app, you can get text alerts for breaking news, severe weather, and traffic delays. Plus, customize your alerts so you only get the information you need. It's easy to sign up for text alerts. Just download our app, create an account, and select the alerts you want to receive. You can even change your settings at any time. So what are you waiting for? Download the News Radio Pensacola app today and start getting text alerts.
So before this bill, only ICE was going in and enforcing these rules. Now you're involving local law enforcement and you are telling them in those lines that they are going to have to fulfill it. So if they say go into an elementary school, go in. So is that your intent? Because that's incredibly heartless and traumatizing for children.
There's nothing in this bill that changes the correlation between local law enforcement enforcing the laws and the federal government. It reinforces it.
Traumatizing, man. Representative Robin Bartleman in debate over the immigration bill that the House and the Senate in Florida have passed now. Over DeSantis's criticisms and with his objections and in spite of what he asked for in the special session. We talked about that quite a bit before. I thought there was actually a really interesting conversation here, and I wanted to have it with you this morning because we just haven't had time elsewhere. The question is, should we or shouldn't we give in-state tuition to undocumented students? You can call them illegal if you want, whatever, dreamers, whatever term you want. It doesn't matter to me. That, you know, it's the same basic underlying reality. Somebody's parents bring them here when they're three. They grow up in Florida, and they go to public high school in Florida. They do fairly well or well enough, and then they get into either a state college or they get into university. And under a law that's under a rule that's been in place for quite some time now, I mean, maybe a decade, I forget when it first went into place, we give them in-state tuition instead of out-of-state tuition, even though they're not citizens and they're not properly documented. Is that the right approach? Okay, and this was the conversation. I'm going to play some of the clips. We're going to talk about it. But how many?
But in a worst-case scenario, it's roughly, I think, 4,000 in our state college system and 2,500 in our university system.
So 6,500 students across the entire state of Florida, this affects. And Anna Eskamani, who is offering some amendments, she is a very liberal Democrat. I like her. She's articulate, thoughtful, interesting. She's a provocative and useful part of the conversation, even if she's wrong 90% of the time.
The data points that I do have is across all institutions, there were about 6,850 dreamers that were granted out-of-state fee waivers on average from 2014 to today, 2023, 2024. So it's going to be around the same number that Representative McClure said earlier. In this previous academic year alone, over 6,500 Florida dreamers with a non-resident waiver paid about $26.7 million in their own in-state tuition at state colleges and universities.
So her argument is there's $27 million a year coming into Florida state colleges and universities, and if we ban in-state tuition for them and charge them out-of-state tuition, they will not be able to afford it because it's about five times as much. It's like $29,000. And therefore, we'll lose all that revenue in the state college university system.
I understand the argument that some make that this is costing state money. I would actually argue that our state university system and state colleges would lose money because these are students who will never go to a college or university because they just can't afford it if they're paying that out-of-state tuition.
Representative Andrade, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. Representative Eskamani, thank you for that response of approximately 6,000 students. Do you have an understanding of the fiscal impact to the state of foregoing out-of-state tuition versus in-state tuition?
So what he's pointing out and is laying the trap, so to speak, because he really was, Rep. Andrade from our District 2 here in the south of Escambia and the most south of Santa Rosa County, he says, do you realize how much it costs us to forego out-of-state tuition for these dreamers by charging them in-state tuition, a delta of $29,000 to, you know, $6,500 apiece?
You're omitting is the fact that these are students who would likely not go to a state university or college because they can't afford it. And so thus, the state of Florida would actually lose on money. And just looking at our open enrollment colleges throughout the state, about 4,500 dreamers paid $14.7 million just to Florida's state colleges. And so the state could lose upwards of $15 million by denying Florida dreamers their non-resident fee waivers.
And, you know, again, it's about $15 million for the state colleges like PSC. It's about $12 million for the universities like UWF. And together, that's $27 million lost. Now, what I thought was interesting is the Democrats kept making a big deal out of the revenue that would be lost if these people don't go to university or college. And what I thought is, well, if there's 6,500 students no longer in the system and are not going to school, yeah, revenue would be down, but we would downsize teachers. And I mean, you know, the system would adapt down, presumably. And so the revenue comes in order to pay for the teachers and the infrastructure, and you wouldn't have to pay for that anymore. So it's kind of a weird argument to say you're harming the system. It's not a moneymaker. You know, also, just for perspective, 6,500 across the state, the entire enrollment at PSC is about 9,500, 9,600. So just to give you a sense of like how many students this really is, that would be like taking 2/3 of PSC's enrollment out of the equation. And, you know, let's say by contrast, you know, 2/3 of the in-state tuition money coming in. So it's, anyway, but back to the argument, they're basically, the Democrats are upset about the loss of revenue and also the loss of productive capacity from not educating these in-state dreamers through the university or the college system.
We've got $15 million on the table just for our state colleges, not even including our universities. So I think that there's a short-sightedness to this bill in going after this small amount of money investment that Florida makes in its young people, in its workforce, and in its ability to move forward.
So, and that is why the state produces education, both at the K through 12 level and at the higher education level, is because we view it as a societal benefit, either an economic benefit because people are more productive when they have skills and training, or as a civic benefit because they're aware of history and literature and arts and politics, and they can think and reason and they can vote effectively, and they keep our republic going. Both are reasons why we do school, okay? So the argument being made here is, look, you don't educate at the higher education level these dreamers, and they're going to be less productive, and therefore we're losing out on that productive capacity. If we educate them, we get more of that productive capacity. And we're losing the revenue, which I've said is an offset by who would wind up getting terminated. We'll come back to this in a second because it's a really interesting conversation. John Pickens has got traffic on the fives.
That's right. No accidents to let you know about right now. But I do have a report. Let's see here. Let me go back to it. If you're on Woodbine Road headed southbound, it's backed up all the way to the Pace Water System. So just prepare for that. You might want to, you know, include an extra 10 to 15 minutes if you're headed that way. Other than that, traffic is looking good. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the fives.
If you're thinking about buying or selling a home, especially if it's the very first time that you're buying a home, look, that is a big decision. It's scary. It's safer and familiar maybe to rent or live with your parents or whatever your situation is. And, you know, I know it's apprehensive. I know because I've done it, you know, several times. And the first time was like, what are we doing? And it's a big commitment. It's a lot of money. And you worry that you're going to get it wrong. That's why you need a good realtor. You need somebody who understands, who can answer your questions and reassure you and take you through the process and get you to a good end result and protect you from your own ignorance about what things you don't know or don't know what to ask. Because trust me when I say this, when you buy your first home, you don't know all the things to ask. And every time we have lived somewhere, we've learned new things. Oh, we got to look out for that. You know, I mean, that's how it works, okay? So that's why you want a good realtor. Because a good realtor will help you think about all of those things. Well, Christina Leavenworth and her team at Levin Rinke Realty, they sold 175 homes in 23. They sold 165 homes in 24. They do this again and again and again, and they know. They know what's normal. They know how to solve it. They know how to help you understand it. I wish I could go back in time and have had a realtor who was as skilled as Christina helping us buy our home for the first time. It would have been a totally different experience. I mean, we had an okay realtor. But man, what a blessing to get that kind of expertise and guidance. 723-9158 for Christina Leavenworth and her team at Levin Rinke Realty. So I said before in the discussion about illegal immigration and about dreamers, those are people who were brought here as kids and have grown up and now go to public school and are now going to state universities or colleges without legal documentation, getting in-state tuition in the state of Florida at $6,500 a year versus $29,000 a year. And I said that Alex Andrade had laid a trap for Anna Eskamani, and the trap is going to pay off here. Because her amendment was to get rid of that provision. She then had a second amendment, which was to only get rid of the, to only reinstate the state college one. I'll explain in a second.
A comparison of the in-state versus out-state tuition at, say, the University of Florida is $6,400 for in-state tuition, $29,000 for out-of-state tuition. We as the state, as the legislature, make an investment in Florida residents and Florida students, and we subsidize their education. I understand that some folks say that any money coming in is somehow a loss if it's suddenly lost. We make an investment in Florida residents, in Florida students, in Florida's kids, and by eliminating this one expansion or overreach from previous years, we will be saving the state money and reasserting the fact that we're investing in Florida students and Florida's children. And so I'll be opposing this amendment because it is a significant cost to the state of nearly five times the cost per student.
What he's saying is if you're reading this as a $27 million loss, since the state makes up the difference between what you pay and the actual cost, roughly $23,000 per student, it's actually a $125 million savings. Or somewhere, I'm just doing quick math in my head, but you know, it's 100 million. Let's say it's 100. It's not costing us 27, it's gaining us 100 because we have less money we have to spend. But it's a, and then she comes back with this conversation. She's offering it just for state colleges because at state colleges, everybody gets in. Okay, you don't have the competitive nature. So it's not like the illegal immigrant child is taking the space of some some actual citizen. You don't have that argument at the state colleges. And we're not, you know, we need more employees. And so we need more people to go and get trained. And so it's good for us overall in the economy. We have major workforce shortages.
We have major shortages across our economy to the point where this legislative body almost explored loosening Florida's child labor laws to make up a difference. And so it hits a point where you can have a debate about immigration on policy, but then it also hits a point for many of us where we're just being cruel for the sake of being cruel.
So put the rhetoric aside and ask the straight question. We have people in the state right now, about 6,500 of them, who are not citizens. They are not legally, they don't have legal status in the state of Florida. And they are wanting and capable of going to either state college or university and getting degrees and then going to work even without that status. Okay, that's what we have. Right now, we are letting them do it for in-state tuition. And the proposal is, and the one they passed would make it so they have to pay out-of-state tuition. And they're arguably, they're not going to then go to school at all, or maybe they leave the state or something like this. Is that good or bad for the state? So the argument for eliminating it is that it's a magnet. It's a benefit. You don't want to have rewards for people who come here illegally, right? The argument for keeping it is it's not the kid's fault. I mean, the moral argument is it's, you know, a 3-year-old and 8-year-old doesn't choose to come here. They were brought here. So what are you going to do with them now that they're here and they don't, you know, they have nowhere else to go. But there's another dimension to this, which is the economic argument. And the reason we invest in people to get an education, as I said before, makes them better citizens, although, you know, they're not going to vote. But it also benefits us economically because their capacity to produce is higher. That's the theory behind why the state funds education, higher education. So we're either going to have an unskilled 24-year-old dreamer, or we're going to have a skilled, diplomaed, higher-producing 24-year-old dreamer. Which one's better for the state? I would argue that the more skilled, higher producing one is better for the state. We get more out of them. If it's better for us as a state to invest in the citizen and get them skilled, it's just as better for us to invest in the non-citizen to get them skilled as well. So I'm not sure that I buy the argument. I'm not convinced. Because the magnet part is interesting to me. But this question about what to do with dreamers is particularly challenging because of the moral challenge with, you know, it's not the kid's fault. And also the economic issue of, well, why do we educate people at all? Now, I know DeSantis would say, and I think rightly so, it depends on what they go to learn. You know, if they go to learn, well, let's take it on the face, philosophy. Does that help us all so much? But no, if they go to learn, you know, a valuable skill, I'm a philosopher, right? Then there is value. So it's a complicated conversation. I don't think it's obvious, but I wanted to discuss it with you a little bit today because it's been the conversation in Tallahassee. And, you know, in your news reports or your headlines and papers or your conversations around the bar, they may not get a lot of thorough treatment. And I wanted you to have played with this topic enough that you have thoughtful things to say about it. 6:54 here on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. If you are a business and you have employees, speaking of, and you have health insurance, dental, vision, life, disability to manage, HR, you know, you have payroll and all of that, and you're doing it and it's going great or you love it or whatever, wonderful, keep doing what you're doing. But if you don't love it or it's a headache or it's not going well or your employees aren't happy or you just wonder if maybe there's something better out there, Torgerson Causey. Have them come and take a look at what you're doing. No obligation, okay? And see if they can't make it better. I know 4 years ago when we started using them, I was, you know, a little bit skeptical. How can they? Well, no, this is great. Like, they gave us options right away we didn't have before, better plans than we had before. In a marketplace that is terrible for health insurance right now, they are honestly giving us the best options available. And every year we're impressed with their customer service, their responsiveness to questions, all of that. So here at News Radio and Cat Country, we use them and they're great. 433-9996 for Torgerson Causey or check them out online at tcbenefitsgroup.com. 655, we've got traffic on the fives with John Pickens.
That's right. No accidents to let you know about. Still seeing that backup on Woodbine Road. If you're headed to Highway 90 going southbound, you're going to see it's backed up way past Pace Water Systems. So pack an extra 10 to 15 minutes with that one. I-10, I-110 are flowing smoothly. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the fives.
Why is Bray Jewelers the best place to buy an engagement ring? Come in and see our selection. I promise you, we have more diamond engagement rings than you'll see anywhere in the panhandle of Florida. But it's what you do for people that they don't expect that they remember. The little things that we do, we want to deliver special experiences for you at Bray. We love doing what we do and we love making people happy. We want every person that walks into the store to feel like you're part of our family. I want everybody to have an amazing experience at Bray Jewelers.
Did you know that with Pensacola Habitat for Humanity, home buyers can choose their location, floor plans, and even certain home features? It's true. With an affordable mortgage, you can build the home of your dreams, tailored to your needs and preferences, all depending on availability and qualifications. Don't wait. Start your journey to home ownership with Pensacola Habitat for Humanity today. Visit PensacolaHabitat.org to learn more and apply today.
Hello, this is Mary with Howard Young Flooring. Shopping for flooring can be a little overwhelming. At Howard Young Flooring, we are here to help you any way we can and answer any questions you may have so that you can make knowledgeable decisions. We understand the importance of each and every customer and would like to thank you for allowing us into your homes. For those we have not met, we hope to see you soon. Visit us today at 4333 Avalon Boulevard in Milton. We look forward to covering your future.
The cooler weather in Pensacola is a great time of the year for gardening. Whether it's planting roses, planting shrubs and trees in cool weather color, and of course, planning for spring. This is Mike Wiggins. If you've got gardening questions, we've got answers on the News Radio Garden Line every Tuesday morning at 9 on the Pensacola Expert Panel. And if you miss us on Tuesdays, then catch the Encore Edition every Saturday morning at 9.
Sponsored by Pensacola Hardware.
Do you want to stay up to date on the latest news, weather, and traffic updates, but don't always have time to listen to the radio? Well, now you can get text alerts from the News Radio Pensacola app.
This means something. It's
And somebody had texted me and said, Andrew, I've been hearing about the idea that people think that maybe the use of AI could theoretically be applied to the battle space, maybe in such a way as it might prevent a nuclear war or something like that. And I have one answer.
Shall we play a game?
No!
I was just about to do that.
David Wayne's in the newsroom with our headlines. David?
Well, members of the U.S. figure skating community are remembering the skaters who died in the Washington, D.C. crash Wednesday. National pairs champion Misha Mitrofanov says that he and fellow skaters at his rink in Massachusetts lost family.
The Skating Club of Boston is a big family, and even though we all have different coaches, for us they feel like second parents.
And two teenage skaters, their coaches, and their mothers were all on that plane. They were attending a development camp in Wichita, Kansas.
All right, David, thanks so much for the update. Got a lot of texts. I'm not going to be able to read them all. Thank you for the feedback on the issue of allowing dreamers to work. Somebody says, maybe what would be useful is we could subsidize them through trade school, you know, like George Stone or something like that. A lot of the jobs that those folks take might not have depth, but that would give them more ability. Plus, they're often likely to travel, and that would allow them to port their skills to other places. Yeah, interesting idea.